This is High Motor by BetMGM. Andrew Dowdy and Chase Kitty here. We're doing some college football today. How about that, huh? What was the last college football episode we did? I think we reset the table like
two months ago.
No, that was longer than a month ago.
It was May, wasn't it? It wasn't that long ago.
I don't know. I've been so dialed into Euro and French Open.
Have you been?
We would have done this last week, but we were in the middle of wrapping up NFC previews. We just didn't want to split those up, so we knocked out all four divisions if you didn't check those out. Really good NFC betting previews. And we're doing college football playoff expansion today. What type of program wins with this 12-team expansion decision? We're going to revisit the divisions argument. That's something that we've touched on a few times on the show last year, I think the year before, but not like an in-depth discussion. I'm not sure how much more needs to be said on that, but I think if we are moving toward playoff expansion, Pete Thamel has mentioned it this week. I think it needs to be brought up. You also mentioned some financial stuff with the playoff expansion. We'll see if we get to that. And starting with this morning you saw Ross Dellinger's article first. It was a behind the scenes on SI.com. That was Wednesday. Then I took a gander at it, and maybe we'll try to get Ross on the show closer to the season to kind of give us like an updated timeline from what he's hearing, if it really is 2023, how it's being received by conferences, schools, etc. The most interesting pieces that I took away were what seemed, and Ross mentioned a few times, like what their primary goals are here. And from what I took away is they had generally two. Number one, access for the group of five. Number two, automatic bids for conference champions, not just automatic qualifiers for certain conferences, i.e. Power Five, some form of AQs, not just P5 champions. My question to you is, do you remember, I think it was the year after UCF's run, so it would have been like the summer or early 2018 season, because that run, I mean, that was only the fourth year of the playoff, but that run kind of pushed the playoff expansion debate into a very violent territory. And it was at this time, I'm pretty sure it was,
some would
like,
say nonsensical.
At that time, I think it was like early that season, early 2018, right before the season, when Barry Alvarez, Wisconsin AD, he and maybe a couple other P5 ADs and conference commissioners started saying how much they were worried about the G5 schools. And now was the time to start the real expansion talk because, hey, look at the G5. They're never going to get in. Let's expand the playoff to help them in. Because that was absolutely hysterical. I found that hysterical then. I found that hysterical now. This piece of it after Ross's article, because clearly this move to expansion 12 teams helps the G5, no doubt about it. Do you buy that this goal of G5 access was, Ross put it, the one very important goal for expansion? Like, do you truly think that even with Craig Thompson in that four-person group, along with Greg Sankey, Bob Bowlesby, and Jack Swarbrick of Notre Dame, like, do you really think that, obviously Thompson cared, but do you really think that one of the very important goals in creating this expansion proposal was G5 access? Are you buying that from them?
I am, but I do think for a cynical reason that's ultimately going to satisfy your cynicism here. I think I have a different cynical take, but I still think you'll like it, which is that we were getting to this point where it was so oligarchical that you were going to start to have sort of level two fans checking out of the sport. I know people who root for West Virginia who are looking around going, we have absolutely no shot at this thing. And that's a Power Five team. So, I look at a lot of things through the lens of the two schools that I root for. So that, like, you know, I'm sure there are other anecdotes from other schools that are probably analogous, though. Like, I think, you know, you could go find, you know, an Oregon State fan. I don't think West Virginia and Oregon State are necessarily analogous, but whatever, you get the point, right? There are a lot of people out there that are probably looking around after the last 5 years going, dude, we don't have a shot at this thing unless you are Ohio State, Alabama, like Oklahoma, I mean, Georgia, like there's six programs and that's kind of it. And I'm not necessarily sold that this playoff format fundamentally changes that truth that, hey, there's a top 2% to this thing and they just kind of exist in a different world than everybody else. I'm not sure that's different, but there is now this illusion of access. There's this illusion of the idea that, hey, anybody can make it again. Anybody can get in there. Anybody can win it. And it's a little bit more like college basketball now, where you go, hey, man, college basketball, every single person has access to win the national championship. And that is technically true, but we all know that, you know, 99% of the time, there's a handful of teams that are probably going to win that thing, and everybody else is just kind of competing to see how good of a season they can have. That's college sports in a nutshell. Most sports, most of the time. So I do think that when you offer this illusion of a more accessible path to the championship and some legitimately, you know, more accessible pathways into the postseason, you are going to have more people that are tuned into the sport. You're going to raise the number of stakeholders in the community. You're going to make the TV package more valuable. All of that stuff raises the value of the product, even if it's not necessarily making more people championship caliber. Does that make sense?
So you're not necessarily saying that Bob Bowlsby and Jack Swarbrick, I'm not including Craig Thompson in this because obviously he cares about the G5 as a longtime Mountain West commissioner, and Greg Sankey, you're not saying that they necessarily care that Cincinnati has access to the playoffs. Like they don't care that Boise State now has a shot.
I think the idea that Boise State and Cincinnati have a shot is economically good for Greg Sankey.
How'd you put it? They're satisfying a lot of level two fans. That's how you put it, essentially.
Yeah, I think so.
Is this, so on that level, this change to you wouldn't be surprising because we're seeing this in every sport. Like, this isn't what baseball is doing by putting a runner on second and limiting pitching changes, runner on second in the 10th inning and limiting pitching changes. Like, that's not what's happening here. But baseball did that to satisfy the level two and then however far you want to go down, level three, level four, level five fans. Like, level one fans are going to watch. It's not a version of that, but it is a version of satisfying the people that might not always watch if your team has no shot.
I don't think that's a great analogy, frankly, because there were other considerations in the 10th inning thing. I think it's about improving the overall health of the sport. And I do think it's possible to be a Power 5 commissioner and want to work on behalf of your member institutions, but also look around and go, you know what, if we improve the overall college football product, that is still good for us. Even if we are changing the shape and form of what the postseason looks like. If you're Greg Sankey, sure, you've given access to G5 schools to the playoff. You're basically guaranteeing that at least one, not basically, you are guaranteeing that at least one G5 school will be in every playoff. But aren't you also more than likely saying that you're going to have two or three or four SEC teams in every playoff? I mean, that is almost certainly going to happen. So maybe that's a trade-off they're willing to make. We're going to, you know, give a ladder to G5 schools while also probably improving the number of schools we're going to get in every year, double it or triple it or quadruple it. I mean, I think that's a reality as well. And so you can maybe offer a concession to G5 schools, knowing that on balance, you might even be improving your position, even though you're giving something away.
Yeah. And we'll move on here. I have a couple questions for, and that's generally where my cynicism lies. Like, that's why I was laughing at Barry Alvarez and Wisconsin saying, hey, it's time to expand the playoff. Look what UCF did. Barry does not care about UCF. There is no way that Barry Alvarez cared about UCF, the G5, or anything. He wanted an expanded playoff to get Wisconsin in. And that leads me probably to this question. It is like, what type of program does this benefit? And the way I want to ask you this is, last week or 2 weeks ago, I asked you a question that Braden Gall had asked on the Athlon Sports Cover 2 podcast, where he said that college football is better when the Minnesotas, the Oklahoma States, the West Virginia type of program are good. So I want to kind of frame it like that by not saying like this specific program benefits. Like staying with Wisconsin, yes, Wisconsin benefits from this. I also tweeted that I think a program like Utah benefits from this. And I think they do for sure. But I think there's a better question here with the type of program surrounding the expectations of that program, of that coach. Because with 12 teams, yeah, I think Wisconsin will be expected to reach the playoff with a 12-team format. Maybe they make it half of the playoffs, two out of every 4 years, two out of every 5 years, somewhere in that area. How does the expansion then benefit a program or a coach who, like, instead of Paul Chryst saying, hey guys, we won 10 games and made the Gator Bowl again, to now he can say we won 10 games, we made the playoff, we lost to Georgia, we lost to Florida, whomever in the first round. Because I think the optics of having like a playoff banner up or having made the college football playoff on that team bio feels a hell of a lot better than saying like Gator Bowl participant in a game in which nobody played. And do you see where I'm going with that? Like, what type of program does that pertain to expectations wise?
I would say the upper middle class. I mean, you know that the people that have made the playoff when it was a 4-team playoff are going to continue to make a 12-team playoff, right? You're still going to see Alabama and Ohio State and Oklahoma, and those programs are going to do what they've continued to do. If anything, I could see a school like Oklahoma or Georgia lose a little bit of ground now, because suddenly the idea that they are playoff proven, like we know that they can get to the playoff, that's not as impressive anymore because there's going to be 12 teams in the playoff. So if anything, I think they could lose a little bit of ground. But a school like, I think you're smart to identify Wisconsin, like that's a team that in a 4-team playoff world just kind of always misses the mark, right? They're good enough to win the Big Ten West. They're good enough to look pretty good throughout the regular season, but they just can't quite win that conference championship game because of what's going on in Columbus. And that almost always is going to bar them from making the playoff. Now, Wisconsin probably looks pretty good. I think this is a great development for the top of the Pac-12.
Right.
I think this is obviously a great development for the Big 12, which sometimes has that great-looking Oklahoma team, but other times when there's a little more depth to the conference and the top beats each other up a little bit, or the middle beats everybody up a little bit, all of a sudden it's like, well, yeah, we don't know if we can get that Big 12 team in there. Obviously, it's good for the G5. I'm even wondering, and this is a question I wrote down in my notes for you, in some circumstances, wouldn't you rather be a G5 program? Wouldn't you rather be Cincinnati than Mississippi State? You know, I get that the SEC is probably going to have multiple teams in the playoff most years here with 12 teams. It would be really surprising to only see one SEC team in. But at the same time, there's a lot of traffic there. And if you are sort of a middle class program in a really good conference, it could be hard. You're going to have to really jump up and have a special year to get access versus a Boise State or a Cincinnati or a UCF, like programs that we know are really good and can have really great G5 seasons where they go 12-0 or 13-0. I mean, it's almost automatic at that point. If you run the table as a really strong G5 program that's established and we all have pretty solidified public opinion on, you're in. So I almost wonder, like, who would you rather be at this point? I do think there's a case, even though if you're great and in a Power 5 conference, it's a lock. You might even get a home game. I still think the path in certain circumstances is going to be easier for that G5 school.
That was a phenomenal answer. I have so many different directions that I can go with what you just... God, that was fantastic.
Do you want to cut it?
Do you want to be done now?
No, I want to hear your thoughts on that, because
there's so many things that I want to touch on. Like, as you first started talking, I pulled up our neighborhood series that we did last summer, where we essentially put all the teams into a neighborhood. Like, Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State was in the first one, for those of you who didn't listen. to that. Then we had Georgia, Florida, LSU, Oregon, Notre Dame in the second one. The idea was not to just rank teams and rank programs as a whole, but more so put them into neighborhoods while acknowledging that, for example, in that first neighborhood, we had Clemson and Oklahoma together, but the gap between Clemson and Oklahoma is gigantic. I mean, we kind of use the example, Clemson has the mansion on the block and Oklahoma has, you know, a nice split level. So when you started talking about that, that's where I pulled up to kind of identify that upper middle class. I don't want to pull it off the top of my head. And I think you nailed it. Like, it's the upper part of the Pac-12. You know, whether that stays Utah, USC, Washington, we don't know. The Big 12 leftovers, I mean, that we always say Oklahoma State, especially after last year when they fell on their face with this prime opportunity to finally get through that noise and make the playoff. It's the Iowa States. It's that, like, third level of the SEC. I don't know if that stays Texas A&M. Is that a program like an LSU consistently who's going to have a hard time making the playoff every year? Is that what now Tennessee and Kentucky are shooting for? Or do we go all the way down to Mississippi State, Ole Miss, South Carolina, Missouri, etc.? Like, is that what they're shooting for? The bigger question that I want to, I think you had a fantastic question. Would you rather be a G5 or a P5 school? I think ultimately you still want to be the P5. In terms of really the entire picture.
Your upside is higher.
Your upside is higher with for a sure. P5 program, but I mean, this goes to a lot of different things. You can ask the question, like when we compare it to college basketball, is it easier to be a team in the Sun Belt or the MEAC or the WAC or the SWAC or whomever than to be a Minnesota where you're going to have to go, you know, 10-8 in the Big Ten. And most years, that is very difficult for a middle tier program. Like to get an at-large bid in the Big 12, for example, you're going to need to go at least 500. And most years in the Big 12, that's extremely challenging. Whereas, with all due respect to our friends in the SWAC, that is not a good basketball league. And I get that it's hard to win at any level, at any conference, but is it easier? And I don't know if I even have the answer to this. Is it easier to build up a Texas Southern and sit at the top if you get that right head coach? And then the coaching part of it is what we've kind of talked about before. What is the path for a coach with goals to be like a high-end P5 coach, to get one of like the top 10 jobs in the country? Is it a Ryan Day path where you kind of latch on to Chip Kelly for a while, you get a lot of good experience, you land a great job with Urban Meyer, you kind of either wait for him to leave, or he could have left at Mississippi State? Or is it a Will Healy situation where you kind of go up the ranks? Is it a Mike Houston situation? Is it a guy that leaps like Jeff Hafley leaping for the Boston College job? So I think you asking that question takes my mind to a lot of different places. And ultimately, we don't know. Like, we're not going to, I think it's really easy to forget. We're 7 years into this, and we cite playoff history and playoff rankings all the time of this happened here, the lowest ranked team to make it, yada, yada, yada. Like, we're still a good decade or 15, 20 years from having like a good grip on how the 4-team playoff works. And now we're going to be swapping that out, hopefully in 2 years, for a 12-team playoff. We're not going to know the answer to your question, but again, off the top of my head, I think it's better to be a P5, like you said, the higher upside. But I'm fine not only just listening to the argument, but I think you can make a strong argument and accept the argument that, like, Cincinnati wasn't bad. Like, they've been a good program. We've talked a lot about that in our neighborhood series. Cincinnati has a very underrated history. And yes, they weren't great under Tuberville, but all it took was landing the right coach. Like, they hit the jackpot with Luke Fickell, but I think that's easier to do than, let's take a middle of the road, Syracuse. How is Syracuse going to make the playoff? Like, if you said right now, who has a better chance of making the college football playoff, Toledo or Syracuse? Who would you take in a 12-team format?
Probably Syracuse.
Really?
I mean, neither one of them. But I got a better one for you. That I'm actually prepared for this, for this specific question. So instead of Toledo, Syracuse, who are you taking to make the playoff first? Coastal Carolina or South Carolina?
This is a great question.
Thank you. I did prep.
I mean, shit, I could do 5 episodes on this. And this is what I was hoping for out of this episode, because playoff expansion has been beaten to death for 7 years. And then over the last, since this came out on Thursday, just about every take has been out there. And like I said last episode, we try really hard to find things that nobody else is talking about.
I like that we waited a week to do this. I like that we got a little extra time to soak on it and read about it.
Yeah. That wasn't our intention, but this is exactly why I wanted to do that. So you could pull this question. This is fantastic.
You got an answer?
Right now, Coastal Carolina. And I have a question for later on in the show that kind of pertains to South Carolina, but Coastal Carolina got their coach. Like, they went and got their Luke Fickell and Jamie Chadwell. The upside is higher at South Carolina, though, long term, because Jamie Chadwell will leave at some point. Could Coastal Carolina hit the jackpot again? Of course they could.
Yeah, Coastal Carolina has a better chance to make the playoff. South Carolina has a better chance to win the playoff. And I think that's the fundamental G5, P5 divide, is that we're giving G5 teams access. I'm still a little skeptical about, can they really win the whole thing? But that's definitely going to have access.
Fun as hell, though, to say that Coastal Carolina has a better shot at the playoff. Definitely this year. Let's say it's a 12-team playoff this year. Definitely this year. Probably next year, too. Maybe in 2023.
I want to see it for more than 1 year before I decide that, like, they're definitely a fixture of great.
I'm just saying, like, if you sat here right now, South Carolina is not making a 12-team playoff this year. They're not doing it next year. Coastal Carolina very well could this year.
You're not a Beamer believer? You don't think Shane's going to take him to the promised land?
I like the hire, and that's where I want to get to South Carolina later on with a question for you.
I know how much you love Columbia.
At one point when this show starts to grow, I'm going to get in trouble by talking shit on all these college. Like, when I come on here and say, guys, Eugene kind of sucks. I'm going to have people from Eugene coming at me.
That's heresy in Oregon, though, right? People love Eugene. Like, even outside of Oregon, Eugene's got a pretty high approval rating, don't they?
That's why we stopped there. You're going from Bend over the coast, maybe stop in Eugene for a few days. You know, post up at the La Quinta off campus and spend a couple days there.
Andrew, you love when I go off the map and do some weird shit for this segment. We are betting on golf.
US Open is off the map for you?
US Open is definitely off the map for me. I'm not a golf bettor.
You teased this all day, and I thought you were going to...
You thought I was picking handball.
Handball or darts or Tour de France, something like that.
No, not golf. I am not
All right, give us the pick and let's get back here.
All warnings up front. Look, I am not a golf aficionado. My mom knows more about golf than I do. I know very little about golf.
Give us the pick.
I bet one golf bet my entire life, and it was the week after Tiger Woods won a couple years ago, won at the Masters. I bet that he would miss the cut.
Give us the pick!
1-0. Lots of people like Phil to win the U.S. Open, complete his career slam this weekend. I am betting Phil Mickelson to miss the cut, plus 110. Just a simple fade the public narrative, fade the hype. This is a 50-year-old man. Betting him to miss the cut at plus odds is a gift.
So I wasn't going to save this for later in the show, but since we kind of bounced off of that with that last question and talking about South Carolina, I have a really fun question for you. And because the playoff is coming in 2023, most likely, I want to ask you which rising programs or programs that you see rising in the near future because of a recent hire, investments, other circumstances, whatever. Which programs do you think are most likely to benefit right away? Like, who's going to be that first program? We're sitting here in October 2023 when those first rankings come out, and suddenly, like, your Oregon State Beavers are in the top 12, or your Colorado Buffaloes are in the top 12. And I think this question requires a little bit more thought, but just curious, like, if anything comes to mind off the top, because that's only 2 years away, 2021, 2022, and then we're taking the jump to top 12 contention discussions in 2023. What programs do you think fit that bill where we're sitting here in 2 years and saying, holy shit, Colorado's in the playoff.
Well, I think you start with Coastal, right? Because they kind of hit it at the right time. Like a year ago, there are a bunch of people that have never heard of Coastal Carolina unless they're college baseball fans or FCS fans. Like, that, you know, there are a bunch of people in like Arizona that did not know that Coastal Carolina is a college. Now it feels like they put together a really, really good team at the exact right time. We've got a one-year transition period where all they've got to do is stay pretty good. They don't have to win their conference. They don't have to go 12-0. They just have to stay in the public consciousness. And then you hit that 12-team playoff year. They've got momentum. And if they're still good, now they've got that little public boost that you need if you're going to make a G5 run towards something like a playoff berth. Where, you know, if it's controlled by polls, you need the people that vote in the polls to already be aware that you are good. You need that little preseason boost. You need that little confirmation bias boost when people are putting their polls together. So I think off the top of my head, that's the first place I go, just because they were such a story last year and they've got the wind at their back. Who do you have?
Well, I'm glad you answered the question that way. Very quickly, I have South Carolina. I think that's really? The team because wow. I like Beamer and I like the development of that program going forward. They've always been an underachieving program. Like, they were the poster program during that neighborhood series of why isn't this program better? We hold this program in higher regard than where they actually sit. But I don't even want to talk about that because I thought you might answer with the G5 program. So that leads me to this. Because we're only 2 years away, a program like Coastal Carroll, I'm so glad you answered the question like this. Jamie Chadwell, he got a bump last year, a bump going into this year. So over the next 7 years, his new contract, it'll escalate from $850 up to $1.15 million within 7 years. Obviously, if he keeps winning, it'll go above that. So let's just say, for all intents and purposes, Jamie Chadwell is making $1 million this year, roughly. If Coastal Carolina knows that a 12-team playoff is coming, will they empty the piggy banks like they wouldn't normally have done? Because they know that if they can hold on to Jamie Chadwell for two more full seasons into 2023, they have a real chance at the playoff, and making the playoff for a program like that could be massive. Does Coastal Carolina just say, screw it, give him $3 million if we can find the money for it, we need to hang on to him?
$3 million?
Whatever the number is, I don't know if it's two or two and a half, ask him what the number is to get him to stay for 2-3 years. Keep building the stability, make the playoff in 2023, and then beyond that, who knows? Like, our program's going to start doing that, knowing that's coming, and then when that does come, because G5 programs now have an opening, are we going to start seeing money being thrown at coaches that we didn't normally see because G5 teams finally see something that they're playing for instead of the bad boy Mowers Bowl?
I have no idea.
Great.
I mean, I think $3 million seems pretty excessive for the head football coach of Coastal Carolina, but
that's besides the point.
I mean, I'm kind of the cynical belief that coaches get a head coach or coaches get a big raise after a nice season like this because the university knows it's inevitable that they're going to get bought out and that somebody else is going to come in and swoop them. There's nothing they can do. So let's just make sure we get paid when they do it. So, I don't know. I mean, maybe. But if the G5 is now has a real path to get into the playoff, do you really need to mortgage your back 40 acres to pay the football coach? Because it's just going to be good, be relevant. You don't have to go all in. This is going to be a regular thing. It's not like there's only 1 year where it's going to be accessible.
Where else do you want to go for the final 5 or 10 minutes here? I mentioned divisions. I don't know if anything else to bring up in addition to what we've talked about in the past.
Yeah, no.
Or any other areas.
It's the money. We got to talk about the money here.
Great.
I can believe that these guys got together in the Dallas-Fort Worth airport, which is a nice airport, and figure out, like, hey, well, you know, what's the best possible way, you know, starting 2 years ago before COVID ever happened, let's explore potential playoff avenues on how we could improve the sport, improve, you know, our financial well-being, improve the product, all this stuff. I can believe that. I don't think it's an accident that this spring, summer, a year removed, right at the end of an athletic year, where basically every college in America with an athletic department had serious debt problems. I don't think it's an accident that this is becoming public knowledge right now. And we can, I can acknowledge that it's good for the sport while also not being an idiot, realizing 100% this is happening right now the way it's happening, because all of these colleges are really strapped for money right now. They just had a worst case scenario year where all of the problems with the model they've been running on were exposed. They have real financial problems. They have to find a way to cover the debt that they have taken on, the problems that have come up over the last year, and an expanded playoff field with a much richer potential for contract television money and home games that wouldn't be included in season ticket packages, where they can make a bunch of extra money and like increase revenue from donors because, hey, look at what we did. We made the playoff and now that's more accessible to more teams. So we can ask for more money and we can sell more beer and do all of this stuff. I think it's all about the money, as it often has been with college football. And I'm not necessarily criticizing anybody. We live in the real world. We need problems to our, we need solutions to our real world problems. So I'm not saying this is a bad thing, but I think it has to be part of the conversation. This is happening, and it's happening right now, specifically because of what athletic departments have been through the last year.
Let me just make sure I'm following you here. You're saying that college athletics is about money. Am I getting that?
Yes, but it's not just that. Obviously, that's
kidding. Yeah, kidding. I got it.
You got what
it.
I'm saying, right? That has to be part of the conversation, right? That why this is happening when.
Okay, it has to be part of the conversation. But if these name, image, likeness laws come about, which it seems like they're all going through, and players will have the opportunity to make money off of themselves, because those are coming, I'm fine with whatever motivation is behind it. If this was purely a financial move on part of the conferences and schools to get their money back, and there was no additional incentive for the student athletes, I think it would be a bigger conversation and a very unfortunate situation that they're continuing to exploit these student athletes. But because those laws seem to be coming, and hopefully by 2023, every football player and whatever student athlete in America at least has that chance if they want to go sign autographs or they get a cut of their jerseys or whatever. If that wasn't happening, yeah, I think it would be a huge conversation. I would have a huge problem with it. I would question the intention far more than what I did briefly with, do they really care about the G5? Maybe we can revisit it if the NIL laws aren't all that great and allow the student athletes to actually profit off making the playoff. But as of right now, I don't think there's that much of a conversation to be had because we're not idiots. Like, I don't know if, I'm sure there are. There are people that are naive enough to think that they're just looking out for the student athletes by giving them another chance to play, all that shit. But I don't think it's that big of a conversation because everybody with a brain gets it. And if student athletes are finally going to be able to make money like they should be able to do, I'm generally okay with it.
And specifically on the NIL thing, which I'm with you. I'm not as, this is another conversation for another day. I'm not as full-throated anti-amateurism as you, but I am very pro-NIL. I don't think it's an accident that you have high-ranking NCAA people testifying before Congress about how they want federal NIL regulation that helps get players paid. I don't think it's an accident that you're seeing that pretty much within the same month that we're hearing this playoff thing. Like, I think this is all tied together. I think they realize we can't make an overt cash grab and not give the players something. We will get crucified. It is morally wrong at that point. Like, let's make sure this NIL thing gets set up. And that is the counterbalance in favor of the players to us scaling this out so that we can get mega paid and deal with these financial problems we now have.
Last question for you in all this.
Yeah.
Are there any losers to this? And a lot of directions this question could go. The main reason I thought of it was, now if Jim Harbaugh or Scott Frost can't make a 12-team playoff, they're really in trouble. Like that's how I am defining a loser in this situation. Because before, and not necessarily for Harbaugh and Frost, but like that coach that is leading a high potential program, can, they're not, you know, explicitly saying this, but like, wow, did you really expect us to make a 14 playoff? Do you know how hard that is? Even at Nebraska, even at a Michigan. But now you have kind of the reverse of what we said before. Now Wisconsin can make it and say, hey, look, we made the playoff, where you have a Jim Harbaugh now of, you can't even make a 12-team playoff. Like, what are we doing here? That's kind of how I thought of it and asking, are there any losers here? But there are other, I think, sides to this too. Are the student athletes losers at all if they don't get the NIL money? Or is a program that would maybe normally already make the semifinals, now all of a sudden they have to play one additional round, but does the financial benefit of that offset it? Like, do you see any losers in this equation?
Oh, I think you nail it with the Jim Harbaugh type pick, right? Because the idea is, well, you know, like, we can't beat Ohio State. We can't win the Big Ten. We can't get in the championship game. Like, hey, we're really good, but, you know, we're just not cracking that four-team playoff. Now, all of a sudden, these programs like Michigan, like a Tennessee maybe, yeah, like a Texas, yep, that think of themselves really highly, but the limited nature of the playoff field has allowed them to say, like, well, you know, we're still elite, but we're not apex elite. You're going to have much, much less of an out at that point. When if Michigan finishes de facto third in the Big Ten, like they finish second in the Big Ten East, but they don't make the championship game in the Big Ten, so they're de facto third, I don't think there's any guarantees that the third place team in the Big Ten is making that 12-team field. So I think you're absolutely right when you frame it like that. It is that sort of like third neighborhood that we talked about, where you're going to start to see some teams have to maybe redefine their self-image if they can't crack a playoff system that lets in 10% of all FBS college football.
I think you are right with that third neighborhood. Yeah, like I'm looking at it again. I think it's like the James Franklin, the Jim Harbaugh, David Shaw is a little bit of a different situation, the Jimbo Fisher, Texas, like you said. Maybe now we're talking about Clay Helton or whomever replaces Clay Helton. It's your boy Jimmy Lake. It's, when can Mike Norvell make a playoff? When is Mike Gundy going to make a playoff? When in the hell is Justin Fuente or Kirk Ferentz or, I mean, even like a Kansas State? Like, what is Kansas State playing for?
I'm not sure Fuente's going to be at his current job in 2023, but, you know, whatever. I'll give you one more loser here.
Please.
People who argued about how important exams are. We can't expand the playoff. What about exam week?
Yeah, turns out nobody cares.
Turns out nobody cares.
Hey, it turns out your GPA doesn't matter. Never been asked my GPA before. Never been asked for a transcript. Nothing.
Never.
It does
not, one
not
time.
Matter.
Me either.
I haven't even been asked for my resume in almost 10 years.
Yeah, I can't say that one, but I definitely was
nobody
never asked my GPA.
Cares what your grades are. Pass the classes and move on. Enjoy yourselves. Anything else?
Well, you heard it first here on High Motor by BetMGM. Make sure you know how to tap a keg before you've memorized all of the presidents in order.
Get those Phil Mickelson bets in too, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. +110, baby. Let's do it.
We're back on Monday on High Motor by BetMGM. So hit that subscribe button on Overcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever app you're using. We'd love to have you back. We're going to continue rolling through college football and NFL content ahead of the season. Not sure exactly what our schedule will be, but we will pick back up with NFL previews, do all the AFC divisions here at some point, and then roll through conference by conference previewing college football for P5, do a G5 preview, FCS preview, and then a bunch more episodes like this, tackling specific topics for college football and the NFL. Thank you for giving us a listen. We'll be back on High Motor by BetMGM on Monday.